Hello and welcome to this EWTN News Special, coming to you today from the country of South Sudan in East Africa. Well, this is a country with a very brutal and bloody history, where even still today, violence and starvation are just part of the reality of life. And now in EWTN, we're going to meet three Irish people who are living here, right in the centre of South Sudan, in an area called Rumbek, who have devoted their lives to helping those most in need. South Sudan, the world's youngest nation, gained its independence from Sudan in 2011, following decades of civil war. Located in East Central Africa, the country is rich in natural resources, including vast oil reserves and fertile lands. But it faces significant challenges, such as political instability, ethnic conflicts, and underdeveloped infrastructure.
We are very happy to see Pope here.
Pope Francis's visit to South Sudan in February of 2023 highlighted the Vatican's commitment to promoting peace and reconciliation in the country.
We hope there will be peace in this country.
Where he urged leaders to end violence and prioritize the welfare of their people. The Catholic Church in South Sudan has played a pivotal role in the nation's history, dating back to the late 19th century. And indeed, a large part of this role was undertaken by Irish missionaries, establishing schools, hospitals, orphanages, and advocating for peace and justice during the country's conflicts. I travelled to South Sudan prior to Pope Francis's visit, to get an understanding of what life is like on the ground for so many people. And to do that, we went to meet a number of the Irish missionaries who still work here today. These young boys are cleaning the dirt from the door of their hut using their bare hands. These young girls are pumping life-saving water from a well. This man with disabilities is moving around in a homemade wheelchair. What you're watching is rare footage taken inside one of South Sudan's leprosy colonies. Under the sweltering African sun, this community lives in dire poverty, where every day is a battle for survival. They live here with the disease leprosy, as they've been banished from other towns and villages, seen as unsafe and unclean.
These people have been chased several times. Many of them have died from being eaten by hyenas. The places that they were living here, there was no doors, there was no shelter, so the animals could just come in at night, and you see they're attracted to the wounds.
This is Nolene Loughran, an Irish volunteer who has devoted herself to helping the 5,000 people who live in this colony. Many of them are missing fingers, hands and toes, and other limbs.
This is Mary. Mary, as you can see, has had leprosy. They had to cut her hands off. She's got four children, and this is her little house here. Now, believe it or not, this house is actually very good in standards of the people that live here. She has a bed, a homemade bed. It's not a bed as we know a bed, but it's still very good and very reasonable. Most people wouldn't have anything here.
Outsiders rarely get to see what life is like in a colony like this, but under armed guard, Nolene has been able to get us access.
Leprosy is something that you never hear about anymore. No. Whenever I think of leprosy, I think of the biblical references.
Yes.
But here in South Sudan, there still are huge patches of the community in certain areas.
There's huge amounts of leprosy here in South Sudan. But leprosy is caused by a combination of different things. One of them is hygiene. And if you have no system of hygiene, which there is absolutely no system here, I mean, in this particular area, there's about 4,900 people and there's one toilet.
Wow. Wow.
So this, and that a toilet is not what we know as a toilet. It is a hole in the ground.
They live here, Nolim, because they're not allowed to live in the city of Grumbeck, in the town, or kind of some of the more built-up villages. They have to have their own colony here.
Yes. If, when I came here, they were chasing the people away from here again. They even all down through history, lepers have been chased away because of the particular kind of disease that it is. It's contagious, and also it carries a terrible smell from the rotten flesh.
It sounds horrific, but it's the reality. If the people here do not get their medication, the leprosy would get worse. Their skin rots and they become weaker and weaker. Nolim and the Sudan Relief Fund supply the people with food and medication. They collect what they can from donors and pass it on to the people.
10 kgs of beans, 20 kgs of pocho. They get oil, soap, sugar, tea and salt.
And how long should that keep them going for?
That will only keep them going for 2 weeks, and that's stretching it, because most of these families have approximately 6 to 7 children.
Yes.
So you're talking that you're really only giving them one meal a day.
Okay, so you're trying to feed a lot of mouths with that small amount.
Yes.
And then do they wait and rely on you coming back in 2 weeks?
There's no one else. They rely totally on me and the work of Sudan Relief Fund that we're doing here. We're trying to grow some crops behind there. There is no one else to come to this area, absolutely no other way of survival.
And they're glad to see you as well,
yes,
we saw when you arrived.
Yes, they're all very glad to see me. You know, they're part of my life now, and I think very dearly of all of them. And so they haven't seen me for 3 weeks because I was away, and now they're all delighted to see me back, and I'm very happy to
what,
be here.
What
with
do
them.
They call you when they see you?
They call me Yar. Yar means white cow.
White cow?
Yes. And in South Sudan...
They're laughing here as well.
In South Sudan, it's an honour to be called after a cow.
The white cow?
Yes.
Okay. Because in Sudan, cows are like money. They're a currency.
Yes. Cows, everything revolves around the cows. That's their only way of trading and being able to survive. But now these people here would have no cows or anything. They don't have anything.
Around 1% of people in Sudan, South Sudan, have bank accounts, so the rest of it is just trading.
It's just
cows.
Trading locally.
Okay.
Yeah.
But here, and that even for if you're finding a wife, the man must have a certain amount of cows.
The man must have a wife, yes. So.
But he must pay for the wife with cows. Is that
with
still
cows,
the case?
That's correct.
But even here in this community.
In this community.
You said they don't even have cows.
No, they don't have cows. And if you see, most of them are nearly all women. And they won't be getting married because they can't. There's no one to pay the cows for them. And also because of their infectious disease, many people won't come here.
Many of the people here would have been waiting all morning for the food to come.
Most of the people here would have been here from 6 o'clock waiting for me. Yes, and that's very, very normal. And as soon as I arrived, all of them. They're rubbing their tummies to say that they're hungry. They're hungry. They have no
pointing
food.
Pointing at their mouth.
At their mouths. And when it's a time like this that they have no food until I come, the people will eat leaves. They will boil leaves and eat them. And that's their only source of food. So if you can understand when you're not getting the proper food and nourishment, this is where all the diseases set in and it becomes just a constant sickness.
With the help they get from people like Nolim, the community here is able to survive. And even though they have nothing, they're filled with such joy and gratitude for any help they do get. Growing up in Ireland, Nolim always thought about going to Africa to work with the poor, but never South Sudan. South Sudan is known all over the world because of the war, because of the unrest, because of the violence. Why did you want to come to a country like South Sudan?
Because it was the worst. I felt that I wanted to reach the really people who were in the worst position possible. And I believed that if nothing else, that my love and my heart for them could help them.
And even today, as we're doing this interview, we have our friends here from the National Police Service, the Army, who are protecting us. So even today, there still is the constant threat of danger.
Yes.
It's in the air.
It's constant here. It never leaves. It's a frightening place to live, but a wonderful place to live.
The people here know that Nolene is putting herself at great risk just being in South Sudan, a place where most will not come. And because of that, and the kindness and affection she shows towards them, she has won their respect and admiration.
Thank you. Yeah, that you are the gift from God.
One little boy who has captured Nolene's heart is Tarkoch. He came here with his mother after they were chased away from the last place they lived.
And do you say your prayers?
Yeah.
What about this one?
Tarkoch has leprosy on his face, which has caused him a great deal of suffering and pain.
Hey Tarkoch, what do you call Nolene?
Auntie Nolene.
Auntie Nolene.
As the evening sets over the colony, I meet John, who has lived here all of his life.
You told me before that you're the champion.
He's playing a homemade board game with other men.
What's life like here in the village?
Yeah, it is difficult because there's no rain this year.
So no rain?
Yeah,
means
if there's no rain,
no
what,
food.
What happened? If there's the rain, we are there in the garden.
Ah.
That's why.
As John mentioned, lack of rain leads to drought. It's another problem that the country battles with year on year. Either too much rain and flooding destroys the crops, or no rain at all and drought, which leads to no crops.
The people of South Sudan, they don't produce anything. All of their food is coming from other countries because they have been at war for so many, many years, and there's still a lot of fighting. There'll be complete starvation in South Sudan this year and next year.
Living here is difficult in so many ways, but for Nolene, she wants to remain to help the people in any way she can.
Even if I die today, it'll have been worth it to have been able to reach the people here who are so desperate and so much in need.
The people here are outcasts in society and have been told they're not welcome anywhere outside their community, except for one group, the Catholic Church. Every Sunday they are brought to Mass outside their community and reminded of their value and worth. The priest celebrating Mass is an Irish Holy Ghost Father, Father John Skinniter.
Do you know how many times our Lord mentions you in the Bible? I said, do you know how special you were to him? And by, you know, talking to them about things like that, it lifted their confidence and their morale and is proving to them that they're worth more.
After the Mass, I travel with Father John Skinniter to visit a school that the Spiritans have opened in an area called Barco.
South Sudan, in many ways, it resembles Ireland. South Sudan fought for independence for so many years because they wanted to see themselves as Christian. And Barco is an area that was very isolated in many ways. There was no school here, no health facilities. and mainly because it was a very violent area. It was an area where people fought a lot over young fellas over cows.
In 2012, the Spiritans entered South Sudan and appealed for peace between the country's various tribes and started a mission focused on education.
We were asked by the community here if we could come and help them to get a school established. This is the school now. Don't drive over my shoes, she's shouting, wah, wah, wah.
There is a real feeling of joy from the kids here that they get to go to school. And you can sense a feeling of pride that they are getting an education. And the incredible thing about this school is that it was entirely built from Irish donations.
The school has over 400 pupils. The school is only 3 years old. It was only built 3 years ago. So you will find that some of the students are in the higher classes are all boys, because no girls would be allowed to walk far distances to get to school and that. So now the girls are having an opportunity to go to school, and we see many in the lower classes.
Father John has been working as a missionary in Africa for 40 years, 10 of which have been spent here in South Sudan. He arrived in 2012, just after the country gained independence.
What was your first reaction, your first impression when you came to Africa?
I suppose the friendliness of the people, the fact that so many people were walking along the road was the first impression, the first thing that struck us in that, yeah. And then, of course, the poverty. And it's probably the one of the countries that I've worked in where you feel most needed. Traditionally, the people would have lived in cattle camps with their cows, etc., with no formal education as such. So now that they want formal education, they can't continue the way of life with the cows. They have to move into the whole aspect of agriculture and developing their skills in growing their own food.
And on another Sunday morning, Father John is on his way to celebrate Mass in the local church.
The youth see the church as very much to the forefront in regards to education and development. They see the Catholic Church has been a very modern influence in their society.
While in the northern hemisphere of the world, the Catholic Church may be declining in numbers, in many parts of the southern hemisphere, like here in South Sudan, the Catholic Church is growing.
There's a great dynamism, and one of the challenges for us is, especially here in the Catholic Church, we have too many young people in the Catholic Church. We have too many youth coming and not enough adults dealing with the youth, because the adults would have traditionally been more inclined to go, because of the British influence, to the Protestant Church, whereas the younger generation see that the Catholic Church is more focused on development and more focused on education, and they tend to come to us.
At one stage, there were over 600 Irish Spiritan priests in Africa, but now there are only 5. And they're handing over the parishes to local priests and religious.
But we have been replaced, as you've seen yourself, by young African missionaries. So the young African priests, the missionaries, the sisters are replacing us. So there's a great dynamism and activity in the church.
You heard Father John say that the young people identify the Catholic Church with being a force for good in society, pushing things like education for all. And an example of this is the development of a revolutionary school here in South Sudan.
I like the teaching. I like the environment. I like the way we are living in the compounds. We are so interactive.
Science. And then we have black science. It is?
Traditionally in South Sudan, only 30% of girls go to primary school, and of them, only 2 to 3% finish secondary school. But now this school is trying to change that. This is the Loreto Secondary School, which is only open to girls aged between 13 and 21, most of whom have come from very poor backgrounds. The school is run by Sister Orla Tracy, a Loreto sister who was originally from County Wicklow. She first came to South Sudan in 2006.
Why did you come to South Sudan?
As Loreto Sisters in Ireland, we were invited to, not just Loreto Sisters in Ireland, but Loreto Sisters in the world. We underwent a reflection and a reclaiming of our missionary spirit. So in 2003, our leaderships in the world invited us to reclaim our missionary spirit and to refound new missions in new countries. So different sisters in different countries went to different places, but for the Irish Loreto Sisters, we accepted the invitation, a very clear invitation, to begin a girls' boarding secondary school in Rumbek in South Sudan. By then, it was still part of Sudan. And
so
that's what we
came
for.
You were asked to do. To come and do.
As our leaders within the Institute, we were inviting ourselves to begin and to refound. The bishop at the time of the Diocese of Rumbek was looking for a congregation to begin a girls' boarding secondary school. So when we received the invitation, it was something we explored, we prayed about. Two different groups of sisters came to examine the possibility. And it was a beautiful discernment process, and all of the sisters said, yes, let us begin. And it was an exciting time because South Sudan had just ended its last civil war with the North. They had just signed the CPA, the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, and it was exciting. But it was very much ground zero when we arrived.
It's fascinating. Where other people might have seen danger and uncertainty, you saw potential.
When we came in 2006, there was one secondary school, and there were less than 10 girls in that secondary school. So when the sisters got the invitation and even came to visit, it was so clear that the mandate was something that really spoke to us and really moved us, because we're all about girl-child education. Our foundress 400 years ago had that great vision that women in time to come would do great things. And that's a very real experience for us here in South Sudan, to start with the few and to allow it to grow and to see it grow.
Traditionally and culturally here in South Sudan, women, girls and education, what has the connection been?
Yeah. Now, remember, South Sudan is over seven times bigger than Ireland, and we have 64 different tribal groups. So we have different languages, we have different cultures, and we have different belief systems. We're here today in Rumbek, which is the centre of South Sudan. And as the centre of South Sudan, we also work with, predominantly we work with the Dinka tribe. But in the school, you'll see girls coming from different tribes as well. Among the Dinka tribe, we are strong on the collectivist experience. So when a young girl is getting married, the whole family is involved in the process. And the girl is married in exchange for her dowry, her cow dowry.
Like in many other African countries, traditionally, girls have not been seen as worthy of an education and a career. Instead, they are expected to be married off to a man in exchange for cows. The more cows a family has, the more well off they are.
Traditionally, she's considered almost like a commodity. When she marries, she brings cows into her family. Her brother needs cows to marry, her relatives need cows to marry. So to educate a girl, traditionally within the culture, it wasn't very popular. It's still a challenge. Today, the statistics of South Sudan would put about 2 to 3% of girls finishing secondary school, and only about 30 in 100 girls going to primary school. So we still have a long way to go, but when you see them here, there's hope.
Following this order, you would get the correct...
Nalong Matiop is 20 years old and has been a student here for the past 4 years. And alongside her studies, she is also interning at the school, helping to educate the younger students while giving her a sense of what it's like to be a working teacher.
You know, our great-grandparents, where there was no school, or if there is school, it's only for men. Because the girl, if you receive your periods the first time, even though you are 13, that makes you a woman already.
Oh, because that's when you would then get married and start to have children.
Yes.
And even in Nailong's own family, there are mixed feelings about her getting an education.
What do your family think of you being here?
There are people who have different opinions about you, actually. My mom and my dad think of me as maybe someone who is bringing a change to the family. Their uncles who want cows, they will think that this is a waste. As she grows old, she's reducing the number of cows.
As most families in South Sudan live in poverty, not having your daughter to marry off in exchange for cows is a financial blow for the family.
Mr. Wani, are these the scientists of South Sudan, the new scientists, young scientists of South Sudan?
But Sister Orla is trying to convince the parents that it's an investment in the future.
In South Sudan at the moment, over 52% of our 18-year-old girls are married. So we would have girls who are 16, 17, 18 here at the moment who potentially should be getting married. Now we're saying to the parents, allow them to finish secondary school, allow them to do internship with us and allow them to go to university. You're asking them to delay that income for another 8 years. That's a hard call to any parent. 8 years is a long time when you're used to dealing hand to mouth. And remember, it's a collectivist thing. So the father might say, yes, I will wait. But the uncles are coming and the uncles are also invested in the girl. And the uncles might say, no, I can't afford to wait. Let her get married now so we can all share the cows.
How many of you want to study science in university? What are you going to study?
This is something that many of the girls here struggle with, being pulled in two directions, staying true to tradition, culture and family, and then the dream of working someday and having a career.
I want to study engineering.
How many other people want to study engineering?
You know, what I feel about many of the girls here, most of them are the first woman in their family to be educated. And that's a challenge for all of them because they're trying to walk two cultures. They're trying to walk their traditional culture and an educated culture. And they're trying to find an identity that can root them in both and where they can be a witness to the community as well. So it's been a struggle for a lot of them. Some of the families will support them, some of the families don't understand them. So for us it's important that they're seen to be part of the culture, but people who have vision and who want to empower and keep the culture so that they can help develop the country of South Sudan.
So for me, I'm trying to be gynecologist so that I have those women.
Here there is an enthusiasm for learning and a sense that these young women know that they are the future of South Sudan.
In the beginning, we couldn't get girls to come to the school. Now we have 400 girls fighting for 100 places every year. So it is changing, and there are now, instead of one secondary school in Rumbek, we have 10 secondary schools in Rumbek.
So I was the lucky one to be among. And now if I've got that chance, I want to be helped with other girls also. I want to be their role models, look up to me and say I want to be like her.
What is your hope and dream for the future?
You know, in our country we need more of doctors, more of teachers, more of something like that, health facilities. So that is why in the future I hope to be a pharmacist. So I'm going to, after internship here, I go to Nairobi for university and then do pharmacy and then at least set up a health facility where I could help the community more.
We have the first group who graduated are now working. They're earning and they are now giving back to their families and they're now convincing other families it's worth the wait. When you get to sit in a job where you see transformation in front of your eyes every day and you see joy and hope, it's just a fantastic job.
These schools are important because they are making South Sudan realize that women too are to be considered in their community and can do much better and can also bring up this country.
The conditions for so many people living in South Sudan today are incredibly, unbelievably difficult. And with a looming famine, they could be about to get even worse. But for Nolene, for Father John and Sister Orla, they continue to do their work dedicated to helping people, trying to alleviate the pain and suffering they have in any way that they can. In Rumbek, South Sudan, Colm Flynn for EWTN News.